All right, we are getting you up till 7 o'clock, golf hour in 1 hour. Mike Pereira from the NFL on Fox in about 30 minutes. Grant Napier and Doug Christie, we're taking your phone calls at 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. We were talking about how I would rank the quarterbacks in 2017, and then we kind of got off on a tangent. You know, top five of all time. I've got my five, and it doesn't matter what order, but my top five are Montana, Brady, Marino, Elway, and Manning, Peyton Manning.
Peyton Manning, I think he fills it out just nicely there, Napes. Yeah. No doubt. I mean, when you talk about someone who delivered, had many failings dealing with the Patriots and was able to get over that hump, you gotta put him in there.
All right, let's get to calls, 339-1140 and 800-920-1140 with Zach. Hi, Zach.
Hey, Grant. Hey, Doug. How you guys doing?
Good.
First-time caller.
Thank you.
Hey, I was just listening, and I wanted to throw in Brett Favre on that list, man. That guy's an animal.
I can't put Brett Favre on there for a couple of reasons. Way too many mistakes in big games. The last game as a Packer, interception in overtime by Corey Webster that he threw up for grabs, had the Minnesota Vikings within basically an eyelash of going to the Super Bowl, threw the ball across his body against New Orleans. It was a football one-on-one mistake. For those two reasons just alone, I can't put him in my top five.
Hey, that sounds good. I just wanted to call and give him a little 2 cents.
Thank you. Appreciate it. And, you know, Brett Favre deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. Great competitor, great quarterback. But, again, his the way he ended his career in Green Bay was, you know, again, inexplicable. Eli Manning outplayed Brett Favre big time when it was 20 below zero at Lambeau, when they said that's Brett Favre's weather. Brett Favre did not have a good game, and he was, you know, one game away from taking the Packers back to the Super Bowl, and throwing across his body when he was the quarterback for the Vikes in that game was one of the worst throws I've ever seen in a big game.
Where do you put him at, Grant? Will you give him top 10?
Yep, I'd probably get him right around 10, 9, yeah. 10. The one caller said let's start from 1980 on.
Yes.
If we start from 1980 on, he's top 10. If we don't start from 1980 on, and I can put Johnny Unitas on there, and I can put, you know, quarterbacks like Roger Staubach on there and others, then he's not. But if we're going to start from 80 on, yes, he's top 10.
Gotcha.
All right, let's get to Daniel. Hello, Daniel.
Hello, Grant. How you doing today?
Good, Daniel. What's happening,
Daniel? What you got for us, buddy?
All right, so you guys are talking about quarterbacks. So I was thinking, what about the only quarterback to go to four straight Super Bowls, even though he lost all four? Where do you put Jim Kelly at?
He's one of the best. I wouldn't put him top 10 personally. He'd probably be top 15 all time, but personally he wouldn't make my top 10 list.
He would probably move up that list if he would have won a couple of those, obviously, because I think that goes into the criteria is, you know, could they deliver with the exception of
Marino.
Yeah, Dan Marino. Everyone else has gotten a championship.
Yeah, and again, I think in football we have to be real careful when we use the Super Bowl as the caveat here because, like, for instance, you know, Jeff Hostetler, Rex Grossman, Trent Dilfer have all won Super Bowls. Would you put them ahead of Dan Marino? I mean, you know what I'm saying?
You got to be
careful when you talk about winning Super Bowl. Mark Rippon is a Super Bowl winning quarterback. You know, you got to be careful, in my opinion. Doug Williams, you know, I can go on and on here. You got to be careful when we talk about quarterbacks that have won Super Bowls. That doesn't make them great.
Right. I agree 100%.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you, guys.
Thank you,
All right, let's get to Keith. Hello, Keith.
Hello, guys.
What's up, buddy?
Hey, I wanted to know where Dan Fouts was at on your list.
Dan Fouts is the top 10 quarterback of all time, in my opinion.
Fouts can throw that thing.
I'm not going to disagree with you.
I mean, he was in an era where offense was not offense. In other words, you know, when defense was the name of the game, Dan Fouts was unbelievable, and he was unbelievable every year. He is one of the great quarterbacks of all time.
Would you put him up with Marino?
I would, yes.
That's my boy. Thank you, Grant.
All right.
Yeah, you know, Dan Fouts, again, and now you look at what they have in I was about to say San Diego, but Los Angeles, the same similar thing with the quarterback. Do you look at Dan Fouts and say, whoa, if he would have played today?
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. Because, I mean, even with defense and the way
they
were hitting,
if
scary, right?
No question. Yes, absolutely. No doubt. Let's get to William. Hello, William.
Hey, what's happening?
Hi there.
So let's start a top five most overrated quarterbacks in NFL history and put Brett Favre as number one. You know, his interception total is like Jerry Rice's touchdown total. Nobody's ever going to even come close, even if they played 30 years, because he threw so many ill-timed interceptions.
There's no doubt. You cannot deny that. You are absolutely correct.
And I never forget being with my buddies and calling that interception against the Giants when they were in Green Bay. And the same thing. He didn't even want to play anymore. It was so cold. I'm like, watch. He's going to throw a pick. They're going to lose this game. I would never start him if I was starting a franchise. And I don't know why. I mean, he was a tough guy and a good quarterback, but he made so many mistakes. There's so many quarterbacks I would take over him. He's so revered as this great quarterback.
Well, he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, no doubt.
Well, yeah.
And William, you know, a lot of Packers fans have that, you know, the Favre-Rodgers thing. And there was just something the other day that they were talking about. If you look at Favre's numbers compared to Rodgers, it's not even comparable.
Yeah, but you see, here's the other deal. If you were going to name great quarterbacks of all time, the way I would do it, this is personally, Favre would be three behind Bart Starr and Aaron Rodgers. And so now again, I'm going back to the '60s, but Bart Starr clearly I would have over Brett Favre. You know, Favre did make a lot of mistakes. There's no question, and it's almost like he didn't care. He was going to throw the ball no matter what, and if it got picked off, so what? You're right. He took a lot of chances.
That Ram game is like a record for playoff interceptions. It's five or six.
I know. Well, the two examples I made, you know, in two championship games in the NFC, one with Green Bay and the one in Minnesota. I mean, come on now. You know, you're rolling out to your right and you're throwing across your body and all you need is a field goal to go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. You know, the other thing that lies in there is longevity.
His longevity is incredible.
No doubt.
All right, 339 1140 and 800-920-1140. Hey, what's up? Hey, West.
Yep. Hey, what about Kurt Warner, guys?
No. Kurt Warner, again.
He got in the Hall of Fame.
And to me, he was borderline Hall of Fame, but that's just me. You know, he had the two really great years with the Rams, the greatest show on turf. I get that. And he was great. You know, he took Arizona to the Super Bowl and was close to winning a Super Bowl there. Great guy, phenomenal ambassador, tremendous family man, tremendous. I mean, I can't say anything bad about Kurt Warner. The guy is just class all over the board. But he's not top 10 of all time.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. And there's just no way.
Yeah, all the things that you just said about Kurt Warner are awesome. And I think that in a lot of people's mind, when you talk about the greatest show on turf, it's just that is what you think about when you think of Kurt Warner.
Well, I mean, you think about that. You know, Mike Martz is the offensive coordinator when Dick Vermeil was the coach, right? First of all, you had a prolific, great running back in Marshall Faulk who could run and catch the ball out of the backfield. Yeah. Isaac Bruce to the left. Torrey Holt over here. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, how are you going to guard this team?
You know
what I mean?
What's interesting, Grant, is every time you talk about a really good quarterback and a prolific offense, you got a wideout on the left, you got a wideout on the right, and then you got a running back that is outstanding in the backfield. Every time you've said it today, that is kind of the recipe to make it happen.
Well, I mean, Marshall Faulk was not good. He was great.
Yeah.
Okay? And
goodness
Marshall
gracious.
Faulk, I mean.
Come on,
right,
man.
As a defensive coordinator, how you were going to – all right, now you would go into that game. How are we going to try to beat the Rams?
Well,
The first thing you would try to do is get pressure on Kurt Warner, but they had a very good offensive line. If you couldn't get to Kurt Warner, your corners were on islands because you were blitzing to get to – and then you got Bruce doubled and you got Torrey Holt. Okay. Oh, you know what? There's Marshall Faulk in the flat. Oh,
wow.
He just ran by six guys. That's a base hit. That's going to be extra bases. That will score one. Here comes another, and it's 5-0. No outs. We're in the fourth. Sorry. But anyway, you really look at weapons, and what quarterback with that type of an arsenal would not produce, you know?
Yeah, well, just think, play action, and the ability, like you just said, to throw the ball to the flat to Marshall Faulk. Oh, my goodness, man, and running by people isn't even an option. And over the top. Whew.
All right, let's get to Chris. You're on with Grant and Doug.
Hey guys, how you doing? Hey Grant, I love your show, man.
Thank you for listening
all day. So just two things real quick, okay? On the Manning-Young thing, I fully agree with you with Steve Young. Outside that one playoff run, you were absolutely – I agree. I didn't think he was great. Correct me if I'm wrong. Manning, I thought, struggled in the playoffs. He did get over the hump with the Colts, and then I think you'd agree that Denver's defense won that second one. But outside of that one that he won with the Colts, I felt like the Patriots had his number, and it seemed like he struggled a lot in the playoffs. And so, I mean, you don't see similarities there. I mean, he was a great regular season quarterback, but, I mean, I listen to your show a lot, and you talk about what has he done in the playoffs.
Outside of
those two runs, I mean, was he really that much better?
Better than whom?
Than Steve Young.
Oh, my gosh. Peyton Manning better than Steve Young?
And the playoffs, though.
Better across the board. Absolutely. Not even close.
Okay.
That's my opinion. I watch Steve Young play every game as a 49er. I didn't watch Peyton Manning play every game of his career, but I did watch Steve Young play every game of his career. And he, to me, as a guy, of all the quarterbacks that are in the Hall of Fame right now, to me, he may be the worst of all of them at reading defenses. The guy could not read defenses. And if you go back and look at any game tape of Steve Young and look at all the mistakes that he made on basic defensive coverages, if you go back and look at his postseason, if you want to take a look at all the losses that he had to Dallas in the playoffs and all the losses that he had when he was awful because he couldn't read defenses, it was just mind-boggling to me how he was so poor at reading coverage.
And with that comparison, you're talking about Manning, who is probably the best at reading.
Yes.
No, I agree. I agree. I guess I'm just looking at wins and losses. I understand what you're saying. I did see a lot of Manning's playoff appearances, and it just seemed like he was good, but he wasn't great outside of the 2 years that he won. So, I mean, I guess I just was wondering about that. I do agree, though. Manning was great at reading defense.
He was the best. Maybe the best of all time.
Right. And when you say out of those two, how many times does he have to win it? But, I mean, he ran into some buzzsaws.
Two different teams,
and he ran into some buzzsaws in New England. So,
you're right. And if I may, real quick, I can take this off the air. I know you don't like doing this, Grant, but, I mean, just talking theoretically, you know, if Carr and that offense for the Raiders is healthy, in your opinion, do you see them as a legitimate threat to New England?
Yes, I think they're a legitimate threat to anybody in the AFC. If to phrase the question the way you just did, yes, I would think they're a legitimate threat. Now, are they good enough defensively at the linebacker position? Are they good enough on the back end? That's the question. I don't know if they're good enough defensively, Chris, but they're still, yes, are they good enough to be a threat? They are.
I would agree with that, Grant. You know, the other thing is when you talk about the moment, the Patriots have been there so many times, and I think that, Chris, is what's going to speak to the Raiders is when that moment comes, can Carr, can the Raiders, can the defense, can they deliver, which you've seen in New England many, many times.
You know what sucks is we didn't get to see Carr in the playoffs because of obviously he got hurt right before. So that's a big thing too. Obviously the playoffs and regular season are a different animal. So I'm excited. I'm hoping that Carr can play 16 games this year and we can get a real chance to see what the Raiders could do in the playoffs. But, I mean, honestly, I am a diehard Raider fan, but I look at across the AFC, and there are obviously some good teams that we got to learn how to beat the Chiefs, apparently. But outside of that, you know, it's like if we can get there, I feel like maybe we'd have a real shot this year. So, anyway, hey, I really appreciate the time, guys. Thank you.
Thank you very much. 339-1140 and 800-921-1140. We get to Ray. Hello, Ray.
Hey, about quarterbacks, I don't know if you call him top five, but probably like one of the most underrated quarterbacks of all time with a couple Super Bowls, Jim Plunkett.
Mm. I don't think he's underrated, but he's not a Hall of Famer.
Well, I mean, he did take a wild card team to the Super Bowl, and he won two Super Bowls.
So did Jeff Hostetler. I mean, you know, again, I we got to be careful that you just look at, and again, you're talking to someone that loves Jim Plunkett as a human being and has worked with Jim Plunkett and is one of the nicest guys in the world. Like, I would love to see Jim Plunkett in the Hall of Fame. But if I had a vote, objectively speaking, I couldn't vote for him to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I just think overcame a lot of adversity throughout his career.
No, there's no doubt. No doubt about it. Yeah. And listen, he got beat up He was on one of the worst teams in the history of football with the Patriots in the early 70s. He got destroyed, and unfortunately, he's paying the price of all of those hits now.
Physically.
He just came out and said he's got Bell's palsy. He's had – you know what, Doug?
Yeah,
you and I just
on.
Had him on the air, and I was asking about all their operations, hips, knees. I love Jim Plunkett. And trust me, if Jim Plunkett were to get elected to the Hall of Fame, I would go all the way to Canton just to be there because that's how much respect I have for the man. But I can't I don't think he's a Hall of Famer.
All right. Well, thank you.
Appreciate you, Ray.
You know, again, I'm looking at, you know, his years with New England, I almost have to throw out the window because they were so bad,
right.
You know. And then, you know, with the Raiders and the two Super Bowls, you know, even the years that he won the Super Bowls, you know, he didn't have great numbers. You know, 18 touchdowns, 16 interceptions, you know, 14 touchdowns, 15 interceptions. Then, you know, in 83, 20 touchdowns, 18 interceptions, not a high completion percentage. It just wasn't. You know, his completion percentage on those years was right around 51% every year.
Yeah, you brought up Hostetler and some guys who have been able to win Super Bowls with not great production. You know, the same thing in Baltimore with managing the game, but your defense is winning the game.
Jim Plunkett, 52% career percentage.
Okay.
All right, completion percentage. 164 touchdowns, 198 interceptions.
Oh. Okay. Drop the mic, Napier.
No, but I'm saying I love Jim Plunkett. I would love for Jim Plunkett.
He was awesome.
But he's just – I can't – objectively speaking, he's not a Hall of Famer, in my opinion.
Think he might make it?
No.
No?
He will not. Okay. All right. Let's get to some more phone calls, and it is Pablo. Hello, Pablo.
Hey, guys. Great topic.
Thank you.
Everybody's passionate about QBs.
Yeah, Doug came up with that before we came on the air today. He said, let's talk about quarterbacks today. I said, you're on. That will be good.
Man, I really appreciate your objectivity in light of that, too, because when you were talking about Plunkett, at first I thought you were, you know, kind of being a little bit harsh. But then I said, wow, that feels pretty – when I seen you mentioned about your relationship with him.
Love Jim Plunkett. One of the great – I worked with him for 5 years doing Raider games. And
he's a great guy.
No, he and I really mean this. Jim Plunkett, I've been in this business a long time. He's one of the best human beings I've ever met, one of the nicest, best guys I've ever had the pleasure of getting to know. I love the man.
Well, obviously, being a Raiders fan, I really admired him. And but back in the day, I was ride or die with Kitty the Snake Stabler, so I'm kind of wondering where he fits in with your whole scheme of things.
Yeah, I mean, and thank you so much for the call. We appreciate you listening. You know, I love the Snake. I think a lot of people did.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, when you get to the quarterbacks, Grant, you know, some people are, you know, they're regional. So if it's my team, but you got to be a little bit subjective here.
All right, let's get to.
I mean, objective, excuse me.
Let's get to Paul. Well, it's both subjective and objective.
And
hello, Paul.
A little bit of both.
Hey, how you doing, Grant?
What's up?
Just so you know, hey, I'm really enjoying this conversation because, you know, it brings me back to a different period because, you know, I'm a half a hundred now. And I remember Plunkett as a kid, and I listened to your show, so I remember you with your logic explaining why in the past. And my attitude toward that, with Plunkett, just a separate note why I'm calling, but I was a kid when we won those two Super Bowls, so I was really excited. But, yeah, I don't see him in the Hall of Fame, but, you know, I'm sure, you know, with those Super Bowl rings and MVP – it's not the end of the world, but on that, as far as an injustice goes, why is Cliff Branch not in the in the Hall of Fame? You know, three Super Bowl appearances and his numbers versus if you look at some of the guys from the Steelers on that, his numbers, you guys can Google that stuff later. But I just wanted to talk about the quarterback pieces. I guess this is all a subjective argument. We all know this. I would throw in for myself either Bradshaw, Terry Bradshaw, and Roger Staubach, just because where they got their teams to. Now, granted, you know, there's a subjective criteria on this piece, and I know Peyton Manning is one of the hardest workers and so forth, but if it came to a big game, I would take Eli. And just because Eli's won in those big games, he's gone on a couple of Super Bowls on that end. Not that I wanted my top five, but I would take him in a bigger game over his brother. But I wanted to leave you with one other note. It reminded me because I enjoy the Giants because of the fact that I'm a Raider fan and they've beaten the Patriots a couple of times. But I remember when Kurt Warner was playing with them, a couple of times when he would get sacked, I remember somebody would pull his jersey, he'd run around the circle, and it was predictable. It's like, he's going to fumble or it's going to get picked off. And I like Kurt Warner because I split time between here and Scottsdale. But that little run around in the circle, I think you know what I'm talking about. A bad flashback for you. There goes the ball.
All right. Thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Thanks for listening to the show.
I can't argue with taking Eli in a big game. Because
he's
Eli
a huge big game quarterback.
Absolutely delivers in ways that you wouldn't think sometimes.
Jason is next. Hello, Jason.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
What's happening?
I just wanted to get back to Brady because you talk about all these quarterbacks having weapons all over the place. And Brady, other than the year he played with Moss, hasn't had a whole lot around him. I think Edelman and those guys are pretty good, but he's never had Marvin Harrison or a guy to that caliber.
Like no, you're right. Guys. That's a great point. Very true.
So I think that shows what he's done.
Yep.
Even moves it that much further up the.
No, it's a good point. Absolutely. And you know what? I just think that was karma that he didn't win it the year that he had Randy Moss. Because when you look at Randy Moss and all of his actions as a player, he's a guy that to me should not have ever won a Super Bowl.
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree with you on that. And my top five quarterbacks right now, I obviously agree with you guys, Breeze, Brady, Rodgers, whatever order you want to put them.
Sure.
And then Eli on that list, and then Rivers, because same thing with Rivers. He has done so much with not a whole lot. I mean, he had LT back then and Gates when he was younger, but what he's done in San Diego, I mean, last year, you look at that team, they're a handful of plays away from being a totally different record-wise team.
No doubt.
So I just wanted to add that. So
thanks for the call. Really appreciate it. Mike Pereira, NFL on Fox, and he's coming up next right here on Sports 1140. Hey, when I grow up, I want to be just like Mike Pereira.
Me too.
Big TV star.
Yes.
Probably playing golf down in Monterey, right?
Probably
you know
in
what
Monterey,
I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good life. Mike, how are you?
I am good. How are you?
Doing good. So, I mean, I am right, right? If you're in Monterey, you got to at least be playing some golf.
No golf today. No golf today. Can you believe that?
I really cannot believe that. Wow.
I know. I'm down in Santa Cruz for a week, and I didn't even bring my clubs. I'm here with my wife and my sister, and actually just got here on Tuesday because we had our Fox NFL seminar last Sunday and Monday. So just really kind of kicking back for a couple of days. And I don't want to, I want to go like for 5 days without getting frustrated. And that
I love it. Mike, as we, you know, get ready to start watching football on a regular basis for everyone listening, are there points of emphasis and or things that you think fans really should be aware of before they start watching week one in earnest?
Well, I mean, I always say that, you know, from the standpoint of the fan, what's going to look different? And that's all that they really, you know, need to know about. There are always penalty enforcement that changes, but nobody would really recognize that. But there are things, you know, they're going to make the game look different. And one is the ability now to celebrate / demonstrate. I don't call it celebration. I call it demonstration, which really is in three areas. You can go to the ground now to celebrate. You can do snow angels if there's snow on the ground. You can do just about anything going to the ground. You can do a group celebration. So if you want to do a group dance, you can do that. And you can use the ball as a prop, only the ball as a prop. So if you want to use the ball as a golf club, if you want to use it as a bottle of milk, if you want to use it as a, you know, powder, whatever you want to do with the ball, you can do. So that's going to put, at least to some more fun in the game as you watch it. Now, the stuff that was, you know, was illegal is still illegal in terms of you can't do anything that simulates a weapon. That's a gun. That's a throat slash. That's a bow and arrow. Anything like that is still prohibited. Anything in bad taste, the sexual gyrations, twerking, I think they call it. I have no idea what that is.
You're on point there, Mike. You must know something, buddy.
Something there. Maybe I've seen it once or twice. I tried it once, and it was an absolute mess, by the way. But So that's still, you know, that's still illegal. But otherwise, that's that little bit of fun is going to be added to it. The other thing is, you know, what we saw the last couple of years where you could run and jump over the center. I think it was Chancellor that was so good at that. You know, you could take a running start on a field goal or try jump over everybody and block the kick. That's now illegal. So you can't run forward and jump, period, whether or not you land on anybody. And of course, overtime is going to change because there's a 10-minute time limit now, as opposed to going a full quarter, which I think changes the game a little bit. I think it changes overtime a little bit because even though there is, you know, two possessions, unless you score a touchdown on the first drive, I think you'll see the team with first possession slow it down a little bit and, you know, try to have an 8-minute drive possibly, which really can happen. And, you know, it's not that it's never happened. There could be a 10-minute drive. And if you kicked a field goal on the first drive, you know, with 5 minutes at the 10-minute mark, then game over. The other team doesn't get an opportunity. So that changes the strategy a little bit, you know, along with changes the look. But that's about it.
You know, Mike, when you go, so all of this was at the Fox NFL seminar. Kind of take us behind the door. What do you do there, or these are the things that you guys discussed?
Well, I'll tell you, it was a great seminar, not necessarily because of the fact that, you know, we went over these types of things. Dean Blandino, who's now with us at Fox, he and I did a dog and pony show, you know, to talk about these rule changes to make sure that, you know, that our talent understood it. You know, then there was the production people that sat down together along with us and had some discussions about what are we going to do now that there are only 4 commercial breaks per quarter instead of 5, all about this pace of game thing. Now, the 4 that you're going to have are going to be very long, that, you know, because you're going to add the time that you lose in the 5th. But you actually are down to 4. So how does that affect us, for example, in a replay review where we normally always went to commercial breaks? Well, this year we're almost always not going to go to commercial breaks because they are not going to wait for the networks to come back to make their decision and make the announcement. So we're likely to stay. The good news is for me,
more airtime for Mike Pereira. I like that.
Yeah, I love it. Got a little more airtime.
Yeah, that's good.
Possibly. Not that anybody wants to hear from me, but you know, but that is something that was discussed a lot. And then we had a most dynamic discussion, and that's all it was. 2 chairs that were put on a stage in front of all of the talent and the production people. And those 2 chairs were occupied by David Hill, who basically was the founder of Fox Sports in 1994, and Jerry Jones, who really was the man that got Fox the deal back in 1994. It's stunning to me that the NFL granted the rights in 1994 to the NFC to a network, Fox, that at that time only had 15 hours of programming per week.
Wow.
That was dominated by The Simpsons and Married with Children. But Rupert had some money. And so Rupert put out the check, and Jerry Jones vouched for David Hill. And to hear those 2 who both got inducted into the Hall of Fame just recently, David Hill got the Pete Rozelle Broadcasting Hall of Fame Award, but to hear them talk about those days back in 1994, and then Jimmy Johnson hopped up on stage, and to have them talk about their run that they had with the Cowboys and how it didn't end on a positive note, and it was just one of the great 1-hour sessions that I had the privilege of sitting and listening to. It really, in a way, got you fired up for football just listening to these people talk. So that's the kind of stuff we do, along with a little bit of social activity in the evening time. So it was a fun couple of days.
I got to tell you, you know, we have not had you on since Doug and I were involved and had the pleasure of being in your first annual golf tournament. And I want to commend you, and I'm not trying to say this to embarrass you, the amount of money that you raised for your foundation and this charity was outstanding. And I think everybody, it was a hot day. It was 107 degrees. And I think everyone that stayed through the reception walked out of there saying this is something that they want to be involved in every year. When you look back, how proud are you of how great this first event was?
Well, I mean, I was incredibly proud of everybody that, that played golf and really hung in there for the 107 or 108 degrees as it got yep. later. And then like I was overwhelmingly touched by, you know, how people opened up their wallets to contribute, you know, in the auction, in the silent auction. It was just incredible. And we did raise a really good sum of money. And I'm happy to say that today we awarded our 57th scholarship since February 28th wow. to veterans, and we now have 53 starting now in high school football. We have two soccer officials, a basketball guy that's starting early, and he's from Sacramento. Our first volleyball official got a scholarship to become a volleyball official. So I'm just so proud, you know, to be a part of this foundation, and just so proud to be aligned with everybody, including the two of you that came and hung in there and stayed for the dinner. It was a marvelous event, and people said, "Are you going to do it again next year?" And I finally said yes, but we're doing it May 8th. We're not doing it June 19th. we're gonna try to make sure that we get a little bit cooler weather this next year. But it was a terrific day, and I must say too that friends of mine that live in Central Oregon in Bend that belong to a golf course named Crosswater, they threw an event up there really later that month. Well, we were just into July. And they, too, threw a beautiful tournament. And same thing, we had veterans there afterwards that spoke, and we told stories. And it was a glorious night and raised a pretty good chunk of money. And not that I'm not looking for any more money, but I really do think that we're funded now through the spring of 2018 as we head into placing, you know, vets into baseball umpiring and that stuff. It's really cool.
Mike, first of all, let me apologize for that tee shot that you saw. I will be better for you next time, my friend.
It was not very good. I can yeah. honestly say you were a better shooter than you are a driver of the golf.
So Mike, if I'm understanding you correctly, this is for one charity, but there's multiple golf tournaments that benefit this charity. Is that correct?
Yeah, they awesome. Called it the same thing. It was the golf fields open in Bend, Oregon, actually. So it was only the two events. That's all we did. But, you know, both of them were terrific.
Mike Pereira, NFL on Fox. Mike, as we, again, get back to on the field week one, anything else that we're missing out that fans need to know about?
You know, I looked at the points of emphasis, and, you know, nothing really startled me. The same situation, the passing game, the emphasis on the defensive holding and the illegal contact and the pass interference. You know, everything is about this year, the pace of game. Commissioner Goodell wants the overall game time shortened. You know, they were 307 last year. He wants it down to 304. He wants the dead time out of the game. So when you look at some of the mechanical things, for example, after a touchdown, as soon as the official puts his arms down, the 40-second play clock is going to start. Mm. And so they've got 40 seconds from immediately after the score to get the extra point attempt off, unless there is the potential of a replay review, and then certainly it could be stopped there. But they want, when the clock stops outside of 2 minutes of the second quarter and 5 minutes of the fourth, they want the ball down and the clock restarted at 33 seconds left in the play clock. So the officials are going to try to get the ball down in 7 seconds. A lot of things to really try to speed up the game. Now, what I'd like to see them do, and I had some conversation about this, I think they've gotten too ticky-tack in the passing game fouls, the defensive holdings, and the illegal contacts, and some of the formation penalties that you know that are being called. What affects a game or the pace of game more than penalties? A, nobody wants to see them. And B, it, you know, it's a lot of downtime, especially, you know, especially if it didn't create an advantage. So that might be next. We might see that they work to reduce the number of penalties. They had 15 and a half was the average that were called, last year. Pretty much the same as there was in 2015. But I don't think anybody would complain if we saw the number of penalties go down. And I guess I should, by the way, remind everybody that replay decisions are made in New York, you know, this year made by Senior Vice President Al Riveron and his Vice President of Instant Replay, Russell Yerk, and no more under the hood. So you don't have to think about what's he looking at under the hood.
I like it.
What might be on that screen? They're just going to pull a tablet out there and put a headset on it. You can look at that. New York will say, reverse it, put the ball at the 30-yard line, second and 10, put 2:17 on the clock, let's go.
Love it.
And maybe that will speed it up a bit.
Mike, always a pleasure. Thanks very much. We'll talk to you soon. You be well.
Appreciate you, Mike.
You got it. Take care, guys.
All right, Mike Pereira, NFL on Fox, and we'll be back right after. Well, I'm glad that they're going to do the replays differently in the NFL. I think that's great.
You dig that one?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
What do you think about the celebration piece of that?
Yeah, you know what? They need to allow the celebration back in. I mean, we're in 2017. I think that they went overboard on not allowing any celebration at all. So yeah. I agree with that. I think it's the proper thing to do.
Yeah, if you want to limit it, like, you know, the gyrate and all the different whatever, but allow them. I mean, because it's natural, you know, from the joy of
let them be spontaneous.
Yeah, Little League baseball to whatever, it's that spontaneity. I agree, Grant. What did he say? 10-minute time limit in overtime. That one.
I just have
to see it work.
Yeah.
You know, that one I'll have to see work.
Jay Bird, what's going on?
Hey, how's it going?
What's happening?
How are you?
Good.
Hey, I'm a big fan of yours, man. I appreciate you letting me get on the show.
Thank you for calling.
I just wanted to, I just wanted to ask you, where do you rank Jim Plunkett and Kenny, the late, great Kenny Stabler, on your list, Grant?
On what list, though? What, are you talking about of all time?
Of all time, Grant.
Well, Jim Plunkett's not on my list, and I mean, because I got to have a cutoff point somewhere, and he would obviously be on my list of quarterback of all time because, you know, that's a large list. But if you're going to keep it, you know, to like top 15, then no, top 20, no. I mean, in my opinion, and again, this is just me, and I have the utmost respect for the guy. Jim Plunkett's not a Hall of Fame quarterback; he just wasn't. That's just me, though.
I was checking in on you. What about the snake? What is he in your top 20?
You know, I'd have to write my list actually down on a piece of paper before I answer that. First of all, it's such a shame that we lost him way too soon. I mean, that was
absolutely.
I mean, just Kenny Stabler was like, even when he played at Alabama, I mean, the guy was just a winner. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Makes great plays.
Yeah, and he was a competitor. Incredible, you know, obviously Super Bowl champion. A lot of people forget he was the MVP of the league in the early 70s. I think it was 74. You know, he was the MVP of the entire league.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Many people forget that.
Yeah. So thanks very much for the call, man. We appreciate
it. I appreciate your time, Grant. Hey, keep doing it, man.
Appreciate you listening. Thank you.
Napes, what was your take on, was it the ring or the jacket that they didn't want, the Hall of Fame didn't want to give to his family?
I believe it was the jacket, you know, because he was posthumously elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame last year, as a matter of fact. And I think it was the jacket. Even the ring, but that's absurd.
Yeah, I agree. I was going to say, I didn't agree with that.
Yeah, no one did.
Yeah.
No, and I mean nobody.
Yes.
Eric, you're next. Hi, Eric.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's happening, Eric?
Not much. Continue on with this quarterback situation. I'm a Bengals fan, but obviously Boomer is probably not going to even reach in your top. But what about Jim Kelly? I think Jim Kelly is probably one of the quarterbacks that I would take from the past and put him on offense today. He's a beast, man.
He was very good. He's not my top 10 of all time, but I mean, I would agree with you. I think if you took any of the quarterbacks and the names that we mentioned from yesteryear and put them in offenses now, I mean, they would be Aaron Rodgers-like, you know?
Yeah, and I agree with some of them, but I think Jim Kelly's probably one that would just slip right in there. And I mean, eight out of his 11 seasons he spent in the postseason. I mean, that's
he was tremendous. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's he'd be one of the guys I'd like to grab his number and put behind the Bengals center back in the day.
Are you talking about instead of Kenny Anderson?
Oh, yeah, I said Ken Anderson or Boomer, but, yeah. You know, if we're going into the 90s, the fact that he took
– I like Ken. I was a big Ken Anderson fan, you know, and, again, came out of – you know, a very small college, Augustana in Illinois, Division III. You know, a lot of people forget Ken Anderson was a Division III quarterback in college, and look at the career he had.
Oh, absolutely, especially under Sam Weiss.
Yep. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. When we come back, the Golf Hour next here on Sports 1140.